Keith Jarrett confronts a future without the piano. So I apologize in advance if this winds up being an emotional time for me, because Keith Jarrett is only the number one influence that I have in my life as a piano player. He's only the number one. Hello everybody, my name is Aaron Hill, and in this video I'm going to be doing an article response. I heard about this information a couple weeks ago from a friend who I actually met recently, as I've taken my music as a pianist outside during this quarantine time to really bring some good vibes to the community in a concept that I call street serenades. And at one serenade, I met a brother by the name of Scott. Hey Scott, if you are watching this, such a pleasure to have met you. And so Scott is very much a deep music fan and a deep lover of Keith Jarrett, as I am. So one day I showed up and for my serenade, and Scott asked me, have you heard that Keith Jarrett will no longer be performing? And I hadn't. And so we talked about it, and here I am now, because I went to search for an article. I'm actually getting ready to put this article up on the screen right now. Hello to everybody who is in the Keith Jarrett trio group. It is so nice to meet you all. I am a new person to this group, and I'm just excited to be here to meet other people that have a similar interest as myself when it comes to Keith Jarrett. So here's the article, and here we go. I'm going to read the article and I'm going to offer my responses. And by all means, please drop your responses in the chat, because I'm going to be reading your comments as we go along. One more thing before I get started. In the background, you're listening to my newest album, which I really feel like is an ode to Keith Jarrett because of how he's impacted my style. And in this moment, I felt like I was in the midst of, dare I say, the Cone concert with the feeling that I felt. So that's my album. It's called The Serenade Volume 12. And if you like what you're hearing, it's available on all the platforms: Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Amazon, Deezer, iHeartRadio, Napster. But yeah, I hope that you enjoy that. Keith Jarrett confronts a future without the piano. This is a New York Times article. Let me shift around a little here. This is a New York Times article, and this article was written by Nate Chinnan. The path-breaking musician reveals the health issues that make it unlikely he will ever again perform in public. And I'm going to do one more thing while we're speaking. I'm going to jump into the group so that I can make sure that everything is live. Please let me know if you all see this. I'm going to drop a line as well so I know that I'm live. And here's a picture of Keith Jarrett. And the context: Keith Jarrett's left side is still partially paralyzed by a pair of strokes in 2018. I don't feel right now like I'm a pianist, he said. The last time Keith Jarrett performed in public, his relationship with the piano was the least of his concerns. This was at Carnegie Hall in 2017. Several weeks into the administration of a divisive new American president. Mr. Jarrett, one of the most heralded pianists alive, a galvanizing jazz artist who has also recorded a wealth of classical music, opened with an indignant speech on the political situation, and unspooled a relentless commentary throughout the concert. He ended by thanking the audience for bringing him to tears. I wish I had gotten a chance to see that that Carnegie Hall concert. Wow. And I, you know, for the record, I was not one of those fortunate people to actually see him live in person. I was really looking forward to it as well. But I'm so grateful for all that I have to watch of him and his archives. He had been scheduled to return to Carnegie Hall the following March for another of the solo recitals that have done the most to create his legend, like the one captured on the recording Budapest concert to be released on October 30th. But that Carnegie performance was abruptly canceled, along with the rest of his concert calendar. At the time, Mr. Jarrett's longtime record label, ECM, cited unspecific health issues. There has been no official update in the 2 years since. But this month, Mr. Jarrett, 75, broke the silence, plainly stating what happened to him. A stroke in late February 2018, followed by another one that May. It is unlikely he will ever perform in public again. Just gotta drink some water, Kirk. I was paralyzed, he told the New York Times, speaking by phone from his home in Northwest New Jersey. My left side is still partially paralyzed. I'm able to try to walk with a cane, but it took a long time for that. It took a year or more. And I'm not getting around this house at all, really. Mr. Jarrett didn't initially realize how serious his first stroke had been. It definitely snuck up on me, he said. But after more symptoms emerged, he was taken to a hospital where he gradually recovered enough to be discharged. His second stroke happened at home, and he was admitted to a nursing facility. During his time there from July 2018 until this past May, he made sporadic use of its piano room, playing some right-handed counterpoint. I was trying to pretend that I was Bach with one hand, he said. But that was just toying with something. When he tried to play some familiar bebop tunes in his home studio recently, he discovered he had forgotten them. Man, that's tough. Whew, I tell you all, this is really emotional for me. The thing that I hope, really, and I'll say this now, and maybe you all can help me with this, because I would love to. I really want to meet him, even though I will, you know, never get the opportunity to see him play. But I really would like to meet him and even interview him, because he really is my hero, you know, for so many reasons, and not just playing the piano, but just how he touches people and how people relate to him. So, yeah, I had heard that he was, you know, playing with his right hand, and it's interesting. I wonder if that was any of that has been recorded, because I would love to see. I mean, wouldn't you just love to see, you know, some videos of him even just playing with that right hand, because you know that even at that stage, he's that brilliance is still there, you know. And I just would like to talk to him about life, you know, how does he see life at this point? And reflecting on his music, I just would love to learn from, you know, his wisdom, you know. So maybe you all can help me by sharing this video, because, yeah, I really would like to sit down with him. I was trying to pretend that I was Bach with one hand, he said, but that was just toying with something. When he tried to play some familiar bebop tunes in his home studio recently, he discovered he had forgotten them. Mr. Jarrett's voice is softer and thinner now, but over two roughly hour-long conversations, he was lucid and legible. Aside from occasional lapses in memory, he often punctuated a heavy or awkward statement with a laugh like a faint rhythmic exhalation. Ha ha ha. Ha ha ha. That's funny. Mr. Jarrett, this is him in 1975 when he performed what would become the Great Cone Concert. A sonorous, mesmerizing landmark that still stands as one of the best-selling solo piano albums ever made. Okay, so those that know, know. Let's see if I can get back in this group and see if any of you all are seeing this. See, the one thing I didn't prepare for this experience with was my box of tissues. It's amazing. So there was a time, let's see, last April. Was it April 2019? I think it might have, yeah, it was this. Okay, it'll come back to me when it was. But within the last year and a half, I had a concert. And it was a solo piano concert. And I had a friend that came up to me at the end and said, wow, I felt like I was in the Cone concert. Now, you all know, I mean, when Keith Jarrett is your guy, I mean, there's no higher compliment. I mean, I could have died right then and there. That's heaven right there to me, right there in that moment. I didn't need anything else. Yep, I felt like I was in a Cone concert. Peace, done. That, yes. So, you know, it was really a touching thing because that concert is hands down one of the most amazing musical expressions I've ever heard. Not just solo piano concerts. So there was another time, even more recently, in the last 3 months, where I was performing outside for my street serenades. And by the way, I'll put my street serenades playlist in the chat of this video and in the description if you're watching afterwards. And you can check that out. But there was a person who came up to me, and she couldn't see where I was positioned and where I was playing. And she came up afterwards and she said, wow, this whole time I didn't realize there was live music here. Like I heard it. It was very present. I was like, where is it coming from? But when I was listening to the sound of it, it sounded like the Cone concert. And she said, the first thing I said to myself was, wait a minute, I have not heard this in a while. And I wasn't even playing anything from the Cone concert. I don't even know the composition. I mean, I can sing it all the way through, but I don't know it as far as a pianist. But it's just that his style is so saturated into the way that I play that my inflections and my phrasing, you know, it's really coming out in that way. And I'm honored because, you know, I've had different influences over the years, ever since I first started as a hip hop musician. By the way, this is my baby in the background, Rolanda, Rolanda Juno. But, you know, ever since I was into hip hop, you know, I've been, you know, you can hear the sounds of my influences and that kind of thing coming through. And I have some other influences, you know, that you can hear. Some Chick Corea in my playing, some Herbie Hancock in my playing, definitely a lot of gospel in my playing. You know, Russell Ferrante from the Yellow Jackets, you know, Robert Glasper, my most recent, like, contemporary influence. And then there's Keith Jarrett. And Keith is like right now at the helm of my voice and what comes through me, because his music speaks so deeply. So I mean, like, I've had, that was two, and I think there was one more that slips my mind. And it's just an honor for someone to come up and say that what you're playing reminds them of the Cone concert, or that they think they're hearing the freaking Cone concert. All right. Raised in the Christian Science faith, which espouses an avoidance of medical treatment, Mr. Jarrett has returned to those spiritual mornings up to a point. I don't do the why me thing very often, he says, because as a Christian Scientist, I would be expected to say, get thee behind me, Satan. And I was doing that somewhat when I was in this facility. I don't know if I succeeded though, because here I am. Wow. Okay. All right. So, okay. those of you all that are just meeting me, there's a number of things that I talk about on a regular basis, and that's a part of my interest. I'm deep into philosophy. I'm deep into the study of like all spiritual paths and that kind of thing. And I talk about different things. So this whole paragraph is a whole another video. You'll see me later for that. Because I didn't know he was in, he was into Christian Science, and I'm interested to see if there's other information that sheds more light on that for him and his, you know, his spiritual or religious side or what have you. And then this last, I don't know if I succeeded though, because here I am. That sounds like a cognitive dissonance to me, and I can understand that very, very well. I don't know what my future is supposed to be, he added. I don't feel right now like I'm a pianist. That's all I can say about that. After a pause, he reconsidered. But when I hear two-handed piano music, it's very frustrating in a physical way. If I even hear Schubert or something play softly, that's enough for me. Because I know that I couldn't do that. Interesting. That's very interesting. And I'm not expected to recover that. The most I'm expected to recover in my left hand is possibly the ability to hold a cup in it. So it's not a shoot the piano player thing. It's I already got shot. Ha ha ha. Now the bad part is that I'm it's a bad laugh, because you know how many times do you imitate someone's laughter in ha's, right? I really want to hear him laugh, because I want to hear this. Is what I'd like, come on people, help me to get to Keith Jarrett, help me to get, you know, where he is for an interview, or not literally, because of course 2020, right? But as far as where the word is out there, so that I can have a virtual interview with him, because yeah, this is very interesting. You know, he says that when he hears the two-handed music, it's frustrating, because I know that I couldn't do that. And then he balances it out where he's like, at this point it's just about even just the holding a cup in my hand. And he can laugh about it though, which is to me the thing that touches me the deepest. If the prospect of a Keith Jarrett who no longer considers himself a pianist is dumbfounding, it might be because there has scarcely been a time he didn't. Growing up in Allentown, PA, he was a prodigy. I didn't know that's what he was, where he was from. Well, I'm in Maryland, so. According to family lore, he was 3 when an aunt indicated a nearby stream and told him to turn its burbling into music. Wow, that's interesting. His first piano improvisation. That's very interesting. Well, I guess we can really thank Auntie for that, because I mean that pushed him immediately into an imaginative place. You know, one of the things that my father did when I was younger was he used to play classical music, and he would tell us stories, me and my brothers, as we were in the car riding with him, and he would make up the stories based on the emotions in the music. So what it allowed me to do and my brothers was to, you know, listen to the music in a different way, to look for it, something else in it, to look at it from a different perspective, which actually gave us a deeper appreciation for it, because we could relate it to something else in life. So it was very, very interesting having that experience. And essentially, Auntie opened him up in that way here. Interesting. Broad public awareness caught up with him in the late 1960s when he was a zeitgeist capturing group. He was in a zeitgeist capturing group led by Charles Lloyd, a saxophonist and flutist. The brilliant drummer in that quartet, Jack DeJohnette, then helped Miles Davis push into rock and funk. Mr. Jarrett followed suit, joining an incandescent edition of Davis's band in Live's recordings. His interludes on electric piano cast a spell. Wow. Yeah, I didn't realize that this is how it got started for him. And some of you all that know the history, by all means, drop your thoughts about his history that you are familiar with. Here's another black and white of Keith. Cool profile pic. Mr. Jared in Bologna, Italy in 1969. In the late 60s, he was part of a zeitgeist capturing jazz group led by Charles Lloyd. Mr. Jared soon hit on something analogous in his own concerts, allowing improvised passages to become the main event. Wow. I so connect with this because this is the story of my life right now as an improvising musician. He was a few years into this approach in 1975 when he performed what would become the Cologne Concert, a sonorous, mesmerizing landmark that still stands as one of the best-selling solo piano albums ever made. It has also been hailed as an object lesson, and I am surely gonna keep this open in another tab right here because I want to see what this is about. It has been hailed as an object lesson in triumph. Wow. In triumph over adversity, including Mr. Jarrett's physical pain and exhaustion at the time and his frustration over an inferior piano. So one thing I find very interesting about Keith Jarrett is that the way that he makes music and the way that I make music is it comes out in that same place of what I would express as like happiness and joy and playfulness and, you know, being adventurous and open, and, you know, and it's interesting though, because while that's that expression, I'm finding places in our personalities where we're like polar opposites. You know, when I think about his frustration over inferior piano, my experience over the course of my career as a pianist, which now has been, I'm 38, so it's been since I was 21, so 17 years. You like my math there. Over my 17 years, when I'm performing and I have an inferior piano, inferior instrument, so to speak, which I think is degrading to pianos. How dare you? No, I'm saying. You know, I embrace it and almost cherish that moment. But I had a moment in my weaning as a musician with my mentor where he used to talk about a concept called situational variables. And that was just basically that you have the music, you have the theory, you have your practice, you have all this that deals with the music. And then you have the environment that you're in when you play the music and the tools that you're using and the ambiance. And all of that is going to be different variables that will affect how you think and how you play, because there'll be distractions or you'll be missing a button on the keyboard or it won't be as loud or the speaker will be terrible or the people will be way in the back and you'll be in the front or you won't, you know, there won't be anyone there, so you'll feel a little down. You know, situational variables. And what he was start to teach me was that the relationship that you need to have with it is that here are the situational variables and here's you. The music is here. The music is in you. So don't rely on the situation to be ideal to make music through that. Start here. It's with you. And so he told me how to take an out-of-tune piano and find the places where it shines and then develop my approach to where I'm only going in that direction with the piano for certain ideas. Or I switch up, you know, a song that I was going to do because it highlights these keys and these keys are in tune while these are out. I mean, it was just so many things. Or use it to your advantage. If you have something that sounds a little funky, use it as a sound effect. You know, I mean, he was like, whew. So, yeah, it's really, really interesting. But, you know, with this Cologne concert, this was the new thing that I learned about this. Because for the last at least several years that I've been listening to this concert, I had no idea that Keith Jarrett was dealing with chronic fatigue syndrome and was in a lot of physical pain and exhaustion. And he was pissed because the piano, he didn't like the piano. So this just goes to a deeper level for me. And I imagine for you as well as a listener, because wow. And he still made the most beautiful music that has changed our lives. That sense of overcoming intrasignate obstacles is an enduring feature of Mr. Jarrett's myth. At times over the years, it could even seem that he set up his own roadblocks, turning concerts into trials of Herculean intensity, and famously interrupting them to admonish his audience for taking pictures or for excessive coughing. So I have a video on my YouTube channel that's called, and please look it up if you get a chance, and I also, you know, put the link as well in the description and comments. It's called "There Is No Sneezing at My Concert." Hope you get a good laugh out of it. So a New York Times Magazine profile in 1997 bore a wry headline, "The Jazz Martyr." And the following year, Mr. Jarrett announced that he'd been struggling with the consuming and mysterious ailment known as chronic fatigue syndrome. Wow. Mr. Jarrett in Berlin in 1972. His concerts became known as feats of Herculean intensity, marked by his admonishments of the audience. Okay, I apologize that you all keep hearing those same lines over. It's just, I didn't realize that it's the same line from the text as well. While regaining his strength, he recorded a series of songbook ballads in his home studio, later released as the touching, exquisite album, The Melody at Night with You. Then he reconvened his longtime trio, a magically cohesive unit with Mr. Dejanet and the virtuoso bassist Gary Peacock. Their first comeback concert in 1998 recently surfaced on record, joining a voluminous discography. It captures a spirit of joyous reunion, not only for Mr. Jarrett and his trio partners, but also between a performing artist and his public. He titled that album After the Fall. ECM released it in March 2018, unwittingly around the time of his first stroke. Wow. That reunion was pretty amazing. You know, the thing for me now listening to this is like, wow, you know, you go back to these albums, and then now you listen to them with a whole new context of where the person was. And then it just takes it deeper for you, you know, because you're like, wow, he was recovering, you know, and he still was persevering and pushing forward and bringing us some of the most amazing moments that has changed all of our lives in various ways. Loss has shrouded Mr. Jarrett's musical circle of late. Mr. Peacock died last month, and this is definitely the next article response that I'm going to do here. So by all means, please, you all, please follow me and, you know, all that kind of good stuff on these different platforms, because this is the next one, and my heart is going to break yet again. He was 85. All right, so we'll come back to that on the next article response. He died at 85. John Christensen, the drummer in Mr. Jarrett's influential European quartet of the 1970s, died earlier this year. Mr. Jarrett also led a groundbreaking American quartet in the 70s, and his other members, the saxophonist Dewey Redman and the bassist Charlie Hayden, the drummer Paul Motian, all major figures in jazz, modern jazz, had passed on too. Well, And that Charlie Hayden and Keith Jarrett record is, oh man. So that's something that's new in my catalog in the last, I want to say year, because I hadn't heard that. And their version of Round Midnight, so yeah, it's amazing. I want to tell you all about my trio in a few as well after I finish this, because I'm fortunate to say that I really feel like the same kind of chemistry that he had with Gary Peacock and Jack DeJohnette, I feel like I have with two brothers now who I've been playing with and who I formed this trio with. And yeah, we pay a lot of homage to the Keith Jarrett trio music. Yeah, so they've all passed on. I didn't know Charlie Hayden passed as well. Faced with these and other difficult truths, Mr. Jarrett hasn't exactly found solace in music as he once would have. But he derived satisfaction from some recordings of his final European solo tour. He directed ECM to release the tour's closing concert last year as Munich 2016. And I just downloaded that. I'm actually going to dig into it very soon. I think that's the one I downloaded. He's even more enthusiastic about the tour opener, Budapest concert, which he briefly considered calling the gold standard. Wow, I love that, the gold standard. As he begins to come to terms with his body of work as a settled fact, Mr. Jarrett doesn't hesitate to plant a flag. I feel like I'm the John Coltrane of piano players. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. I hear all the cheers out there in YouTube and Facebook land, because I'm telling you, that's, we know, if you know, you know. He is the John Coltrane of piano players. He said, citing the saxophonist who transformed the language and spirit of jazz in the 1960s, everybody that played the horn after he did was showing how much they owed to him. But it wasn't their music. It was just an imitative thing. Of course, imitation, even of oneself, is anathema to the pure blank slate invention Mr. Jarrett still claims as his method. I don't have an idea of what I'm going to play anytime before a concert. And I just have to stop there, because that's the story of my life at this point. And that's why I feel so connected to him. I'm that same way. I show up and I never know what I'm going to play. I just sit down and whatever comes out is what comes out. He said, if I have a musical idea, I say no to it. Describing this process, he still favors the present tense. Beyond his own creative resources, the conditions of every concert are unique. The characteristics of the piano, the sound in the hall, the mood of the audience, even the feel of a city. Mr. Jarrett had performed in Budapest four times before his 2016 concert at the Béla Bartók National Concert Hall, feeling an affinity he ascribes to personal factors. His maternal grandmother was Hungarian, and he played Bartók music from an early age. He had a lot of exposure. I felt like I had some reason to be close to the culture, he said. Wow. The embrace of folklore music by Bartók and other Hungarian composers further nudged Mr. Jarrett toward a dark quality. Yeah, he's very folkloric. A kind of existential sadness, let's say a deepness, powerfully present in the concert's first half. The second half, as admirers of the Cologne concert will appreciate, features a few of Mr. Jarrett's most ravishing on-the-spot compositions. Those ballads like Part 5 and Part 7 spark against briskly atonal or boppish pieces, gradually building the case for mature expression that might not have been possible earlier in his career. This author is doing a great job too at the way he's writing. Kudos, kudos, kudos. Well, and said it might not even been possible early on in his career. Wow. Part of that evolution has to do with the structure of Mr. Jarrett's solo concerts, which he used to unfold in long, unbroken arcs, but now involve a collection of discrete pieces with breaks for applause. Often, the overarching form of these more recent concerts is only apparent after the fact. Wow. But Budapest was an exception. I saw this one while I was in it, which is why I chose that as the best concert on that entire tour, Mr. Jarrett said. I mean, I knew it. I knew something was happening. The crucial factor, he acknowledged, was an uncommonly receptive audience. Oh, the sensitivity, I love it. Some audiences seem to applaud more when there's something crazy going on, he said. I don't know why, but I wasn't looking at that in Budapest. Given that Mr. Jarrett has made all but a small portion of his recorded output in front of an audience, his cantankerous reputation might best be understood as the turbulent side of a codependent relationship. Oh man, that was a really funny way of putting it. He puts the matter most succinct during a Carnegie Hall solo concert in 2015 when he announced, "Here's the big deal that nobody seems to realize. I could not do it without you." Wow. Wow. Amazing. Amazing. It's a really cool picture of him out in nature. It says this is him in rural New Jersey where he still lives. And this is in 1982, the year that this guy was born. April 28th, to be exact. I accept all Cash App, Venmo, or PayPal. As he renegotiates his bond with the piano, Mr. Jarrett faces the likelihood of that other relationship, the one with the public, coming to an end. "Right now, I can't even talk about this," he said when the issue came up, and laughed his deflective laugh. "That's what I feel about it." And while the magnificent achievement of Budapest concert is a source of pride, it's not hard to see how I could also register as a it's not hard to see how it could also register as a cosmic taunt. It's interesting, this dichotomy, you know, this cognitive dissonance. Budapest is amazing to him. It was really significant to him for another level of not even the music, but a psychological connection and feeling and sensitivity with the audience. But yet at the same time, on the other side, he's like, this could also be a cosmic taunt because this may be the top of the mountain right here. Interesting. "I can only play with my right hand and it's not convincing me anymore," Mr. Jarrett said. Wow. "I even have dreams where I am as messed up as I really am. So I found myself trying to play in my dreams, but it's just like real life." Wow. Okay, so now this is, oh my God, and that's where it ends. Oh my God. Okay. I need a comment. I need something to brighten me up because I did not expect. Oh man. Now here's what I'll say. This is an absolutely incredible article. Kudos to Nate Channon. You did an incredible job, brother. I hope that you see this. I hope that you see my high five. You did an incredible job, in my opinion. Whew, amazing. Yeah, that right there at the end. I need to pick me up now because that's tough. Okay, the first comment comes from Guido Malsh. This is about how music should be played, how life should be lived, how articles should be written. There we go. Kudos. And how it all should be enjoyed. Man, I'm going to comment. Can I comment there? Oh, I can't comment. Okay, maybe I need to become a member or something. I want to comment. This is about how a comment should be written, how an accolade should be. You couldn't have summed it up better. Michael says, Keith Jarrett's music is the arc of life, at least for me. For me too, brother. Noah says, Keith Jarrett is an absolute genius. I'm dismayed that the article had to start off with I have no idea what that says. I think it means to say divisive, but it says derisive political commentary, and that artists feel compelled to use their platform for it. It's time to move on. Not everything is about some political party and their dirty laundry. Interesting. I don't know that I really felt that it went that deep into the political thing, but that is me. And also, this is me. Me says, all I can say is God damn it, God damn it, God damn it. And I'll give you one more. I'll take your three God damn it's me, and I'll raise you one more. God damn it. If there were ever a time for some bloody robotics, right, I know, right, or stem cell genius to step forward and help, this would be the moment. Where are you? I definitely feel you on that. But then again, as my buddy Blue would probably say, and this is my longtime friend and bass player, then it doesn't make this life special anymore. And yeah, but it is true. We would all want him to continue on forever and continue to give us more goodness. That's why I want to talk to him now, because I'm really interested on more of his perspective of life now, even more than just, you know, than just music, you know, or just playing. Greg in Michigan says, I think Your Key Way was the first piece I heard by KJ. It opened me up musically. Much enrichment has followed. Margot says, simply devastated. May you find peace. Paul R. says, after losing his hearing, Beethoven found a way. Hopefully Keith Jarrett will as well. Smart Girl, New York City, NYC, says, Mr. Jarrett, your work is sheer grace. We're all rooting for you. I had to go back on that because she might mean something completely different by NYC. It might be mean, you know, new young camper or something like that, you know. Carl from DC, right next door to me. I'm in Baltimore, Maryland. Carl says, raised in the Christian Science faith. That was the one mistake I made on that album, but it was the best mistake ever. It's my favorite part of the album. Raised in the Christian Science faith, which espouses an avoidance of medical treatment. If you have symptoms of a stroke, seek medical treatment immediately. The sooner the treatment, the better the chances for recovery. Much love, Carl. You are absolutely right. Eric Matthews says, I first learned of Keith Jarrett while at UC Santa Cruz. My favorite albums are Bremen, La Seine, Treasure Island, the Sunbear Concerts, and Munchkin. I had the pleasure of seeing him twice, once in Marin, California, and later in San Francisco. At the concert in Marin, it was very ethereal and almost dreamlike, with Mr. Jarrett ending the concert with a Peter Pan riff. Ooh, oh my God. I would have dreamed of being there. Never Everland. San Francisco was one of those where there... Okay, I've been waiting for this. San Francisco was one of those where there were coughing fits by the audience, with several people walking out and some fool yelling, play Freebird. Mr. Jarrett wanted to record the concert, but what happened that night meant that the recording would not be released. Wow. Wow. And see, here's the thing about me. I would have still released it. Because that all makes for the moment. It's just all a part of the moment. That's real life. It reminded me of a Jimi Hendrix concert in Rochester, New York, with some fool yelling out, play all night. Jimi Hendrix stopped and said into the microphone, that man could have saved himself the cost of a concert ticket and have said the same thing in the bathroom. It does break my heart that age and time are catching up with all of us, even the people we love, enjoy, and admire. My fantasy concert would have been seeing Bruce Hornsby and Keith Jarrett playing together. Wow, bro. Wow. You're on point with that. One wonders what would have bloomed from this cross-pollination. Fair winds and following seas, sir. Fair winds and following seas. Man, the realities of life. Ken Krimstein says, when he played Shenandoah in Avery Fisher Hall, first final encore, I swear the entire west side of Manhattan fell silent. Whew. I've never heard anything like it, she says. He says, I apologize. Whew. Ariel, I find his work is magical when it's time for me to make up my mind on things long contemplated. Thank him. You know, one of the things that I love about reading comments, and this was what I said in my last interview, and if you didn't see my last interview, you can look right on my YouTube channel. It's one of the last videos. It's the Keith Jarrett interview with Doug Watson. I did a reaction video to that. You know, when I think about what people say about an artist, I love to hear from people who aren't musicians, but they're people who experience life deeply, because the words that they use to describe how you impact them are very beautiful. You know, they use different aspects of life to explain them. So even more than reading this article, or equally with reading this article, I actually enjoy in another unique way just hearing how people have been impacted, like what people's memories are of these amazing experiences, you know, because you really see how a person is seen just as a human being, like not just for what they're known for, but as a human being. Velo Brewer says, Keith Jarrett, as revelry turns to reflection, refraction, soul-drenched soliloquy, say that three times fast, is ever by twisting path exuded until tears appear, then disappear into blissed, extroverted introspection. Wow. Live on in peace for the rest of your days. God damn, that was the most poetic piece ever. Velo Brewer. All right, a few more and I'm done. Citizens from Albany, New York says, Keith, you will always be remembered in love for your musical talents. Bask in it to the end of your days. Alex C says, I love Mr. Jarrett's music like no other. There's a deep connection in his work that is difficult to describe in words. It works on a soul level, really. I cannot thank him enough for the profound beauty and joy his art has brought to my life. You know, and that's deep for me because, again, looking at all these words, you see how you touch people at the deepest level. And these are the kind of words that I receive too. So it's just like, Lady on the Rock says, Keith Jarrett's playing both inspire and humble me. I'm so grateful to have seen two concerts live, as well as purchased many albums over the years. Always changing and elaborating, he demonstrated the peaks of improvisation, likely in the way that Mozart may have done, that we have read so much about. Dazzling, deep, and meaningful. It opens up a whole new world. As a musician, I thank him over and over again for creating his beautiful music and sharing it with the world. Last two. Dennis Peterson says, for a guy growing up on the West Coast, Keith Jarrett was always a little bit of a mystery. I loved his vocals while playing his passion. And you all know what they mean by vocals. The thing is so interesting about it, I'm going to have a whole conversation about that one day. Keith Jarrett's passion when he plays comes out in vocal moanings and groanings, and as well as, you know, a whole lot dealing with the way that he moved his body. But when it comes down to his moaning and groanings, you either absolutely love it and can appreciate it, or you can't stand it. And so I want to have a conversation about that and want everybody to jump in. Keith Jarrett's moanings, were they great, or should he have played quietly? I already tell you the spoiler alert. I can't get enough of it. I can't get enough. Like, you know, to the point where it comes out of me when I'm playing, and I get it. I get that zone, that dimension. Trev says, for someone like him, let me recommend a DAW, Digital Audio Workstation, for those that don't know, like Ableton Live and a few synthesizers and sound libraries. If he can still use his right hand, he can easily use a DAW and could potentially be the number one producer on the planet, or at least have a way to express his artistic genius again in a new way. So what Trev is saying, and I understand because I'm a studio recording engineer, Trev is saying that, you know, Keith should switch over to creating, or should maybe look at switching over to creating music on a computer and being able to make music using everything in the box, as we say. And then last but not least, Jeff C. says, I still recall the first time I heard Bremen Lassane, I think I'm pronouncing that right, solo concert on vinyl in 1974, and was captivated by its musical beauty. And I haven't heard that concert. That's one of the reasons why I can't pronounce it. In all the years since then, whenever I popped into a music store, I would always look to see if there was something new by Mr. Jarrett. I thank him for his superhuman, magical, and unique solo recordings. And I do too. And I do too. So, yeah, this is, I tell you, I'm reading this and I'm tearing up after every couple words just because of what this is, and you all know why, you know. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and bring this to a close. It's been a fun time. I actually wish, wait a minute. I think we might be up. Let's see. No. Okay, so I was, oh, it does say I'm live. It does say I'm live. Okay, I'm sorry. Give me 60 more seconds if you all are here, because at first I couldn't pull up. I didn't see the live video in the group, and now it looks like it might be live. It says I'm live, but it gives me a live video. Okay, I'm gonna try it on my desktop. Give me 1 second, everybody. Travel with me across my computer to find you. Okay. This is how you know when it's time to end. Okay, let's go. Keith Jarrett Trio Group. And I just want to see, because it's really nice to meet you all, those that have come in on this experience. This is my very first time in the group, very first time sharing, and I want to make friends. But it doesn't seem like I'm going to be able to, because it doesn't show that I'm live. So I'm going to answer all your questions and say hello to everyone after this experience. I really thank you for hanging out with me. And yeah, once again, if you've enjoyed the music in the background, it's my album called The Serenade Volume 12. This is available everywhere, Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, all the rest. You can just type in Aaron Hill, The Serenade Volume 12. And in the background there, I'm playing a song of mine, original song called Home. And so last but not least, if anything in this expression touched you in any way, if you appreciated it, if you learned something from it, and you would like to help me to make more content like this, then you can do so by looking at the info in the description or comment section. And I will see you right back for that next article about Gary Peacock. See you soon. Take care.